Hi, this is Caden Harris from 91.1 WEDM, and joining me today from the Indianapolis Colts, executive producer of content creation and sideline reporter, Lara Overton.
How are you today?
It's great to be back. I'm great. Yes, enjoying good. A bit of a different, you know, it's a slower pace in the off season, so great to have some time to talk Colts football and everything with you.
All right, let's jump right into it. So the season just wrapped up. How would you say it went for you overall?
Overall, from a content production standpoint, especially through those first 10 weeks of the season, outstanding. I mean, no shortage of storylines, especially, you know, through training camp when you have a quarterback competition. So I felt like that in terms of a ton of engagement that was there, right, from both a local and a national perspective. And then the start of the season going the way that it did, the Colts establishing themselves as one of the best teams, certainly one of the best offenses in the AFC, and Daniel Jones really coming in, you know, in that conversation for comeback player of the year. Jonathan Taylor is on an MVP start to his season. You have Tyler Warren, who immediately is impactful as a rookie, one of the more impactful rookie seasons that we've had from a Colt in recent memory. It seemed like everything was firing on all cylinders. Tons of optimism surrounding the start for the defense with Lou Anarumo, the new-look Colts defense that he brought in. And then everything kind of changed post-bye week, right, with the injury to Daniel Jones and a number of other factors. Well, hey, you know, one thing I skipped over entirely, you know, getting in before the bye week was a trade for Sauce Gardner. We really haven't seen the Colts make an aggressive mid-season move, trading two first-round picks plus Adonai Mitchell to the New York Jets in exchange for a Pro Bowl corner. Of course, that's one of those areas that the Colts really wanted to make a heavy investment. So overall, it was, you know, tons of activity, tons of storylines, everything great. And then just, you know, difficult, the, you know, culmination of the season going the way that it did. You just felt for the guys in particular, right? Because they had positioned themselves so well. So the way that things all finished, you know, through that stretch, latter stretch of November and into December was certainly, you know, difficult, but still, when you look at it, tons of optimism as you go into 2026 for this group, you know, knowing that head coach Shane Steichen, general manager Chris Ballard, they have a plan for this offseason, and Carly Ursay Gordon, of course, her and her sisters, this will be their first offseason leading the helm as, you know, the owners and leading the franchise. So lots, of course, that we will be getting into with the combine and owners meetings coming up over the next few weeks.
So what is the experience like for you, especially in the production behind the scenes type of scenario, following a new player like Daniel Jones and Sauce Gardner coming to the team?
Most of it is getting to establish the relationships, getting to know those guys, establishing trust with those guys. Because when we have players who have come in, they've been Colts their entire career, guys like, you know, a Jonathan Taylor, Alec Pierce, Michael Pittman Jr., Zaire Franklin, Kenny Moore, a lot of those guys, we've had long-standing relationships that we're able to kind of build upon and rely upon heavily. When guys come into the Colts organization and they're new Colts and they may have been with one team like Sauce and the New York Jets or Daniel Jones, who'd been with multiple teams, we don't really know what their past experiences have been like or how much content they're used to doing with an in-house, you know, production team versus what they're doing from a national standpoint, different media. So a lot of it goes into just, you know, making sure that those guys are comfortable and making sure, too, that whatever we are pitching, engaging, whatever our content plan is that involves those guys, that it meets their, you know, it's meshes with their personalities and, you know, their objectives and different things like that. So it's really just getting to know those players. And Daniel, from the get-go, I was so impressed with. Had some opportunities to really get to know him in training camp, and I think that was one, that's one of those times where you're with and around the players every single day. You're around in practices, so that's such a formative time. That's something that obviously we didn't have with Sauce. He came in and immediately had to prepare to play a game in Berlin, right? So we got to know him, of course, as the season went on, even despite, you know, the injuries to the latter part of the beginning of his season. But this will be a time with which going into the off-season training program, you have minicamp, you have training camp for new guys we get in the building or guys we haven't had as much time with. Even a guy like Cam Bynum, who is incredibly content friendly and always willing to do a ton, we haven't yet had a full off-season of getting to work with him just yet. So he's another guy who I think will be really fun to get to know more and more, especially for the fan base to get to know as well.
So you mentioned Carly Ursay Gordon earlier, and it's very sad that we lost Mr. Ursay in May. What, if anything, has changed under the new leadership?
From a day-to-day operation, really not a whole lot from our standpoint, because Carly and Kaylin in particular are so omnipresent. They are part of the workings of the building every single day and have been for many years. And then, you know, Casey Foyt as well has always been involved, always see her, you know, not as forward facing as maybe you've seen Carly and Kaylin, but she's always there on game days, always has her family around, the big events, always involved. So from our standpoint, they are, you know, such present leaders, and they're around and they're involved in all of the day-to-day operations within the building. So that has been something that in terms of the transition really hasn't felt like much of a transition from our standpoint, because they truly take pride in making sure that they are involved in every aspect. You know, they're in meetings, they're in the building, and they're accessible. So that's been, you know, something to see their, you know, opportunity to step in and even have a greater, you know, presence from the NFL standpoint right now as the owners of the franchise. This past year was really cool to see the amount of support and the amount of excitement there is to see so many women from an ownership standpoint within the league.
So the Colts, unfortunately, are not participating in the postseason, so we have to look ahead to what's next, which is free agency.
Starting with the offense, we'll start with Pittman and Pierce.
What should we expect for them?
Yeah, I think that Chris Ballard made it pretty clear that Alec Pierce is certainly a priority this offseason, and the interesting scenario is a lot of teams are going to want a player like Alec Pierce. You think about this past season, he surpassed 1,000 yards receiving for the first time in his career, did so working with three different quarterbacks, led the league in yards per catch once again. I was actually listening to something, credit to Kevin Bowen for this stat on 107.5 this morning, but Alec Pierce had almost 200 yards of penalty yardage. So, you know, DPI calls that went against him that he was able to capitalize on. So all of that's just a sign of the respect, the growing respect that Alec Pierce is getting across the league by these DBs who he's going up against. He is a guy who's been a career Colt to this point. I mean, from the very beginning when the Colts were interested in drafting him, he was one of the few guys that Reggie Wayne went and scouted on campus. Reggie went to University of Cincinnati, watched the pro day to get a first, you know, eyes on, hands-on look at Alec Pierce. So it's an interesting scenario where now he does have the opportunity to explore free agency. He'll obviously look at what the market value is. And for, you know, a player, a wide receiver in particular of his caliber, it's going to be hefty, right? It's going to be a big price tag, and that's well earned by Alec. So I think there'll be some competition for him. I do think he has indicated that he would like to return to the Colts, a place he's been very happy. And he said also, he would like the opportunity to play with Daniel Jones again. Not to say those guys are a package deal, so right, to speak, but I do think that each of those guys, in terms of having high offseason priority, that is certainly there. And there's mutual interest from both the Colts standpoint and Alec and Daniel's standpoint as well. Big questions surrounding Daniel Jones, of course, coming back from the injury. But anymore, you see guys really recover, you know, swiftly and fully from an Achilles tear, and what he did. And you see the great promise. That's one thing that Carly said in her season ending presser was you saw the production of the offense with the guys who were there running Shane's system that really, you know, gives you optimism and confidence that they can recreate that. Now, you mentioned Michael Pittman Jr. He's been out doing a lot of the Radio Row stuff at the Super Bowl, as has Alec Pierce. And he had some comments yesterday that he, you know, does want to come back, want to be back with Indianapolis. It's a place that the only place he spent his career. It's the place where he bought a farm, right? And he's had all of his three children and he's raising his family here and all of that. And he's obviously been an integral piece of this offense. Now you're just kind of seeing how this offense and how these roles have shifted just a little bit with the emergence of Alec Pierce. I definitely think that, you know, Pittman's not going into free agency. He should be a guy who's returning. It'll be interesting to see, though, with how the numbers work out with some of the other contracts that you're trying to sort through. Is there maybe a restructuring opportunity with Pittman's deal and what he signed? So it seems like I don't have any intensive knowledge of any of those conversations at this point, but I do think that it would be something that at least would be a point to possibly entertain if you're able to work some things out in Michael's contract that help afford you, you know, some of what you're going to need to secure Alec and Daniel Jones.
You spoke on the quarterback situation a little bit, how Daniel Jones showed a lot of promise for his injury. Riley Leonard also showed promise when he got the opportunity to start. And not to mention, you still have Anthony Richardson, who's also, I think he still has a winning record when he started. So what's that situation like right now and going into the offseason?
It is a really interesting quarterback room. And I went back, I was listening to a couple different, you know, interviews that I had done. And, you know, Daniel Jones had described it as undoubtedly one of the more athletic quarterback rooms that he's been a part of. When you look at what those three guys are all capable of doing, you know, not only with the arm strength and the arm talent, but also with their legs and their ability to run with the ball, make plays with their feet. And when Philip Rivers came in for a brief period of time, just before, you know, after the Daniel Jones injury, before it was Riley Leonard to start the season finale, I joked with Riley that when you're in a quarterback room that includes Philip Rivers and Daniel Jones, you know, Anthony, you know, in that conversation, but certainly with the expansive knowledge that Daniel and Philip have, does it feel like you're getting a master's degree in quarterbacking? And he laughed and he totally agreed. And it's a great dynamic. Cam Turner, the quarterback's coach, does an incredible job kind of balancing that room. And one thing that we learned is obviously Anthony going through his injury that he had that made it not an option for him to come in support once Daniel Jones was hurt. Everything that he's been through, he's been the consummate teammate. He has been incredibly supportive of all of the other guys in that room, doing whatever he can to help them get ready to prepare for game days. And, you know, that would be a situation where, you know, given some of the adversity that he has been dealt in the early part of his season, like Anthony very much could be, you know, kind of down in the dumps. That's totally not who he is. He's a guy who is so incredibly steady and always wants to be sure that he's not only doing, you know, what's best for himself, but also doing what he needs to do for his teammates. So it's one thing that I always know about Anthony is he's an incredible teammate in whatever facet, you know, whether he's a backup guy, whether he's recovering from injury, whether he's been a starter, he's incredibly even keel. So that's certainly going to present some interesting questions going through the offseason.
I really enjoyed watching Riley Leonard get his first big shot in the NFL. So what is it like for you to see rookies like him get their first shot?
It is really cool. It's one of those things that for a player like Riley, you don't know if you're going to get that chance. You know, you're a backup guy and you're, you know, working with the scout team the majority of the season, taking all of those reps. You don't get a ton of reps with the starters, and you know that you're one play away from being the guy to step in. It's different from a player like Tyler Warren, who you know him is going to be immediately impactful, right? You're a guy who's part of the playbook coming in week one. We need you. You're going to be a weapon. So that's been really fun to see just with Riley how appreciative he was of the opportunity. And when you watch him play, like, Riley plays the game. I mean, he is a tenacious competitor, prepares immensely. I mean, he was going to Daniel Jones's house on Tuesdays and working with him and, you know, going through the playbook, going through the scripts and working with Daniel when Daniel was a starter, just because that's how he immerses himself in the study portion. But he also just plays with so much joy. There is just at some point, like, although Riley well knows how to prepare and act as a pro, when he steps on the field, he also has just that overwhelming sense of like, dang, I can't believe I get to play this game. It's such a cool dynamic, and it's been really fun to see, you know, Riley through these different opportunities just continue to grow in his own. And one thing I'll say about him too, loved by his teammates. Like, that's a guy who they will lay it all on the line for each and every time. I mean, you see him take hits, he's right back up. Like, he's certainly a guy who has like that it factor, just to kind of command presence. And I think it's not something that he's like forcefully tried to do, like, oh, I'm a quarterback, I need to do this. It's been very organic and it's very authentic to who Riley is. And I think to why so many people loved him coming out of Notre Dame, right? So many people were rooting for them in the national championship a year ago because of, you know, his charismatic persona, you know, the leadership, and also really that dynamic playmaking ability that he has that you saw on display in Houston.
So we talked about the offensive side of the ball. Now moving more to the defensive side, because of the Sauce Gardner trade, the Colts currently don't hold any first round picks, but that hasn't stopped Chris Ballard in the past from finding some hidden gems. Now this year, is there any pressure on him to make sure he hits on one of those picks?
I would say in the tenure of Chris Ballard, he's tended to do pretty well day two and day three. So although there aren't those first round picks that are available, or that one first round pick available, you're going to see this team be very aggressive, you know, on day two in particular, make the most of those second and third rounds. I would say certainly positions of focus. I think you're definitely going to look at defensive line. You're always going to want to try to invest in that area. I think you need to continue to add depth at that position. You need more of a pass rush. You want to equip Lou Anarumo and this defense with more opportunities to get to quarterback. So I think D-line will be a priority. I also think linebacker. We obviously saw some rotation outside of Zaire Franklin, trying to bolster that group a little bit. Jermaine Pratt came in late in the season, was able to play in heavy rotation in that area. So interested to see what they'll do there. And I always think you're trying to, you know, bolster your offensive line. You're going to look at what talent is there, what availability there is, because you saw a number of guys kind of working in and out of the roster this year. In particular, a guy like Jalen Travis play meaningful minutes as a rookie. So I think you're going to continue, and you've tended to do, you know, really well at that position on those second and third days. When you think about where you were able to draft Braden Smith, where you got Tanner Bordellini, Matt Gonsalves, Danny Pinter. So I think those will continue to be areas of priority for the Colts as we look ahead to the combine and then also onto the NFL draft.
Looking in the state of Indiana in general, how do you think IU winning a national championship will impact the football culture?
Oh, it's anytime you have a team within the state that puts itself, you know, announces itself to a national audience and has so much excitement surrounding it. I mean, it truly felt like there was like the entire United States, minus maybe, you know, South Beach, that was rooting for Indiana in that national championship. So it's just going to continue to generate tons of positive attention for football in the state of Indiana. You know, even more players, even more people, I should say, are going to be watching the NFL draft because they're going to be locked in on, you know, where Colt or where IU players are getting drafted. There's obviously going to be an IU pro day people are going to be locked in on. And then that's just going to, you know, continue to be, you know, creating a ripple effect across football within the state of Indiana. You know, man, what a story it would be if you could get an IU guy, you know, drafted to the Colts, or, you know, even an undrafted guy who makes the 53-man roster onto the Colts. So, yeah, there's no doubt that the prominence of Indiana football, winning a national title, having as many great players as they did, the way that they did it, the way they not only brought in guys via the transfer portal, but also the way that they developed a guy like Charlie Becker. Not that he's a guy who's going to be coming out, right? He's a returning guy, but just the way that Indiana was able to build their program in so many different ways. When you had, you know, transfer portal guys, you had guys who came with Cignetti from JMU who developed into starters, and then you have guys who have been part of the program for many, many years. It's such a cool story, and I think it's going to it's going to spark a lot of people's interest in terms of watching, you know, this offseason across the state of Indiana.
Breaking news, we just found this out a couple minutes ago before we started the interview. Frank Reich to the Jets as their offensive coordinator. In your experience with him, what does he bring to the Jets organization?
He is so innovative in what he does as a play caller and as an offensive coordinator. Players love Frank. He is a, you know, he has such command, and he's such just a great leader. Certainly he is going to be a coach that guys are going to love playing for. And he also is going to bring the best out in his players. He's going to find, you know, creative ways to utilize guys differently. You know, you saw it from his time. He was an offensive coordinator with the Chargers, offensive coordinator with Philadelphia Eagles prior to becoming the head coach in Indianapolis, then going on to the Carolina Panthers. Last season operating as the head coach, you know, reuniting with Andrew Luck and being at Stanford on that one-year interim stint. Excited for him to get back into the NFL. The New York Jets organization is going to heavily benefit from the presence of Frank Reich. Certainly they have an interesting offseason in terms of what they're going to do with their quarterback situation. But when you look at Frank and, you know, the way he operates his offense, you're going to see it's going to be dynamic. You know, it's going to be explosive offenses. And he is really, he's going to utilize many of those weapons, you know, that he is going to inherit. And he's going to find, you know, alongside Aaron Glenn, great ways to, you know, reinforce that group as well. And I think it's kind of cool. I mean, Aaron Glenn and Frank were once teammates, now reuniting, you know, as co-coaches. And I was texting the Jets team reporter that, you know, not only will you love working with Frank, like your organization is going to love working with Frank. I think it's going to be an incredible opportunity for him, especially, you know, with a team that struggled last offseason. You know, he's going to provide a much needed spark, especially on the offensive standpoint.
All right, we've talked plenty of Colts now. Now it's time to talk about Lara.
Growing up, who was your favorite football player?
Oh, I had a few. So I was a big Bob Sanders fan. Huge Bob Sanders fan. So Bob, Reggie Wayne, those were kind of my biggest two guys who I was a huge, huge fan of when I was growing up. Those would have to be like, and I can't pick between them. I think I have to have like an offensive guy and a defensive guy. But those were always the two who I locked it on and watched. So just the way that Bob played, I think, just the style of play. I mean, just unbelievable. Like, undersized guy at that position, the impact that he had on the teams that he was a part of. So those were definitely my two growing up. And now getting to, you know, work with Reggie in the building every day is pretty awesome.
What is your favorite Colts game that you've ever witnessed, either working or as a fan?
Oh, you know, I had they pulled off the win at Seattle with Philip, it may have been that one. Like, that one was had all the makings of being one of the best I'd ever covered. Like, it had this incredible feel to it, and Philip coming out of retirement, and you wanted it so badly. And I was, you know, down on the field, and when I'd been with Philip previously, or when I'd been part of the team when Philip was there in 20, it was COVID, so we didn't have, like, the same interaction. So, like, you get such a better feel for it. But that's one that ranks right up there for sure. I would say this year in Berlin is definitely one of the top, just the historic nature of playing a game in Olympic Stadium, the Colts hosting a game in Berlin, Jonathan Taylor breaking the franchise record in that game, playing the way that he did. The atmosphere of it all was just incredible. And then one of my other favorites was my very first season, and this is probably why it ranks so high, Colts Sunday Night Football 2019, Arrowhead Stadium, playing Kansas City. This is Jacoby Brissett as quarterback. It was actually pre-Jonathan Taylor. I believe it was Marlon Mack at that point. Had an incredible game. And, yeah, it was just the – it was such a cool moment because, obviously, that's height. That's peak Chiefs dominance. And Colts pulled off the upset. And I just remember standing on the field, and I was interviewing Ryan Kelly live, and Jacoby Brissett comes and just bombarding Ryan. So we get this whole great interaction, the celebration, you know, live on air. And it was just one of the cooler moments, just that feeling of going in, especially a place like Arrowhead Stadium, you know, much like Lumen Field in Seattle. Like, it has that aura about it, right? It's known for being one of the more hostile environments to play in. So I would say those are a few of my highlights for sure. I would say that Sunday Night Football, Colts at Arrowhead Stadium, knocking off the Chiefs, and then probably this past year in Berlin, getting the win over the Falcons at Olympic Stadium.
You mentioned his name, so it definitely should be talked about. Phillip Rivers.
Yeah.
How cool is it to see a guy like him, you know, retire and then come back as a 44-year-old?
He is truly different than any player I've ever been around in the absolute best way. When Phillip Rivers enters a room, like, the energy shifts, right? Like, it's just, like, it's unbelievable. And it's not because he carries himself in such a way. It's just, like, this man is a force. And to watch him come back into that building, have the buy-in from everyone, and be so excited to be a teammate again, so excited to play football again. Like, this is a guy who had absolutely nothing to prove, right? He's on a Hall of Fame trajectory. In fact, was a, you know, semifinalist for the Pro Football Hall of Fame and put his Hall of Fame chances on hold for another 5 years because he came back and played again after that. It was just unbelievable. It's just one of, he's so selfless. And to have the opportunity to watch him operate at the line of scrimmage, watch how he's, you know, making checks, making the calls, watching him come over to the sidelines, the way that he would operate on the sidelines. Like, it's one of those where, you know, there's kind of that era of quarterback, right, that you kind of group Phillip within. And it was so special to just watch that firsthand. But I think that I'll just so remember his talking about, you know, coaching high school football and thinking about not only his kids who he coaches, but also his children, that, you know, he wanted to be an example of, you know, being able to not be scared and put yourself out there and not be afraid to take a risk and do these different things. And it just, I think that everyone at that point was like, oh, like, what would you not want to do, you know, for this guy? Is it, if you're your teammate and you hear that, like, you knew that Philip Rivers each and every Sunday was going to do everything he could and, you know, most often did put you in a position to win. And so it's really special when you have the opportunity to be around a guy, you know, like that. I mean, I was around Peyton and I was around Andrew, and having been around Philip and having been around Matt Ryan, like, it's incredible. I've been incredibly fortunate to have that number of guys. And then you see the players who are in that building right now. You know, you see a lot of those traits in some of the guys who we have as well.
Okay, this next question is pretty controversial,
and it might get you in trouble with some of your colleagues.
Oh, no.
What's the hardest position, in your opinion?
Hardest position on the field?
Yes.
Oh, man. I mean, obviously, everyone kind of goes quarterback, but I'm going to say, I mean, I think that centers are so overlooked in everything that they are doing, you know, and the position that they're getting the offensive line in, so much that runs through them, especially, you know, when you talk about trying to communicate with the quarterback when it's loud, different things. So I would say, like, I think center, I don't know if it's the hardest, but that's probably one of the more, like, cerebral, like, mentally challenging, I would think. And part of that is, like, I've studied so many centers. I've spent a lot of time with different offensive linemen talking about their position. I'm going to say center, and I'm also going to say corner. I think a lot of times people overlook the task that a corner has matching up on, you know, the number one, especially like a number one wideout. When you know, think about like this weekend, you know, and the matchup that you're looking at, like whoever is tasked, you know, in the Super Bowl with covering Jaxon Smith-Njigba and what he's going to have to do. And, you know, not only from a physical standpoint, but exactly like mentally, not only trying to anticipate what they're doing, but making those quick adjustments on the fly and playing instinctively. I think that's one of the things that really impresses me about cornerbacks is often, you know, the guys who are most successful, certainly like they're well studied and different things like that, but they also just have some of the greatest instincts on the field. And I think that's something that is definitely regarded as being one of the more challenging aspects of that position. So those are probably, I'm going to go one offense and one defense, just like I did favorite player growing up, one offense, one defense.
All right, Lara, thank you for taking the time to come down here today. We really appreciate it.
It's always a pleasure for you to come down here. Thank you.
Always a pleasure to be here. Anytime. Always love coming back.